When you need guidance from someone you can truly trust, someone who aligns with your values of sovereignty and natural living, look no further than Dr. Jennifer Tice. Dr. Jen's expertise in homeopathy and naturopathic family care is unmatched. She is my personal go-to when I need an opinion on how to best support my family and myself when we are healing. And something I'm always telling everyone about, Dr. Jen runs a very specific food intolerance test. Having this information has quite literally changed my life once I decided to take it seriously. Knowing what our specific foods were to avoid has radically improved the health of myself and my children. So if you're looking to uplevel your health, head over to drjennifertice.com and you can find her on Instagram at Dr. Jennifer Tice.
Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home. Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home.
Welcome to the Free Birth Society podcast. This is a radical space for women who are ready to celebrate their autonomous choices in birth, motherhood, and beyond. Together, we'll learn about wild birth through personal narrative, we'll explore the politics of birth, and we'll analyze everything that relates to our lives as women from a feminist perspective. Here's your host, Emily Saldaya.
It's been a while, freedom child.
Women, it is 2025, which means it is time for you to take your place in the sovereign birth movement. I am thrilled to announce that our absolutely groundbreaking, life-changing, consciousness-shifting, super popular program, the Radical Birthkeeper School, is now open for enrollment. This is your chance. We run the Radical Birthkeeper School once a year, so now's the time to jump in. You love this podcast. You're obsessed with birth. You want a better world for women and families. So here it is. I am inviting you to join the 850 women from over 30 countries who have taken this program and now are confidently bringing this work forward, protecting the sacredness of birth, being an option so desperately needed for mothers and babies. From women brand new to birth, to curious mothers pregnant with their first child, to disillusioned midwives and doulas, even OBGYNs and nurses, women are flocking to this new paradigm of birth consciousness, and the Radical Birthkeeper School is the gateway. The RBK School is the place to gain the language and the knowledge to communicate and step into the sovereign birth paradigm with confidence. If you feel the call, answer it by taking your place in the RBK School. Head over to www.radicalbirthkeeperschool.com today to preview the full curriculum, hear from our many graduates, and learn more. Mentorship, sisterhood, lifetime access, the knowledge, wisdom, and guidance you need to take your place in the sovereign birth revolution, all totally unlocked. Be the change. Join us. radicalbirthkeeperschool.com. Every now and then, a product comes along that our entire family can't get enough of. And lately, it's masa chips. Delicious chips made the way food was meant to be. Just three simple ingredients. Organic corn, salt, and beef tallow. No seed oils, no fillers, no ultra-processed garbage. Just real, whole food that nourishes rather than depletes. What we put into our bodies matters. It affects our energy, our mood, our resilience. And yet, the food industry today is completely disconnected from what's real and nourishing. Just like birth, food is one of the most powerful ways to claim sovereignty over our bodies. And it's no surprise that a sovereign birthing family is who makes these chips. When you snack, snack on something real. Go to masachips.com/discount/freebirthsociety and use code FREEBIRTHSOCIETY for 20% off your first order. Welcome, Eve.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. Yeah, it's been a minute. You were in RBK many years ago, it feels like now. And I'm just excited to hear your full story as it has shaped up for you. So just take us to the beginning. Who are you as you become a mother?
Yeah. My name's Eve. I'm from Finland. I was at the RBK school round spring round 21. But my journey as a mother started when I met my husband about 10 years ago. I always knew that I want to be a mother. I was nursing my dolls and everything. I really wanted to have a lot of children. And then I fell in love, and we were in different countries for the first year. But when he moved to Finland, we knew that we want to get pregnant pretty soon. And I was 25 at that time. And I thought I was gonna get pregnant like right away. It was quite shocking to experience two and a half years of not getting pregnant. But when I finally did, I was really happy. I wasn't at all aware of like anything other than the normal road to go to the prenatal care and then give birth in the hospital. And I had a nice, easy pregnancy. I was really, really excited. And it was the last month of my pregnancy when I heard about, actually, I heard about home birth here in Finland. And, but I was like, no, that's not for me. I don't have the time and I could never do it. But I got interested in preparing myself in some way, and I ended up in taking a hypnobirthing course, which gave me a lot of interesting new information at that time about preparing myself. And I actually had a great birth, as I thought that time. After the birth, I was well prepared. I thought I want to have an unmedicated birth. I thought it would be like, for me, it meant like a natural birth in the hospital. And I got it. It was really fast. It was easy, I thought. I was really surprised. I was like, oh no, I didn't know that birth can be this fun. You know, I had only heard all the horror stories and I didn't expect it to be that great. But the mothering journey in the beginning was really hard for me. It was like now when I reflect on that, I know that I had a nice and easy birth, and then I just somehow panicked and sabotaged myself, and I couldn't breastfeed, and everything went really, really bad in the first weeks and the first months. But I still loved my experience to give birth, and it felt really interesting to me. I wanted to learn more about birth.
So knowing what you know now, what do you think went down that prevented the breastfeeding?
Yeah, I've analyzed that a lot, and I know exactly why. I guess I just went the mainstream road. I went to the prenatal care. I got all the fear-mongering about the weight of the baby. I just panicked. I really feel like I just didn't have the right support at that time. I didn't have the confidence. I was like really prepared for the birth, and I thought that, yay, I did it, I got it. And I somehow, maybe I thought I manifested it myself. And then with the breastfeeding, I just lost all my confidence. It's just so weird to think about it, how in panic I was. I had no community around me. I had no friends with babies, and no, it was a whole different time for me. Now I have so many women around me, and I'm so supported, and could have been really, really different. But then I was just, yeah.
Okay, so that happens, and then what do you want to say about, you know, moving us into your next baby?
Yeah, so the first year was tough, but in the months I just got some kind of hold on the mothering, and I think after the first year I was like, okay, I'm the mother of this baby, and I had grown to be the mom I wanted to be. And yeah, I read everything about birth. I ended up learning about home birth, and at the beginning it was quite funny. I was like, yeah, next time I could give birth at home, but it's free to give birth in the hospital, so I will just do it in the hospital next time as well. And it's so funny to look back at the process, and it gives me so much understanding for other women to see my own road as well, how it went and what was the process. So after the first year, I was quite sure that I will give birth at home. And I kept reading and kept reading and kept learning about birth. And then my daughter was 1.5 years old, and I heard about free birth, about a Finnish woman, Maria, who's also been to this podcast. And then I heard about your podcast. It was the first way to learn about the stories of other women. And I remember the specific moment. It's such a big moment in my life. It's like the huge light bulb moment when I was, we hadn't talked about getting another child yet, but we knew that we want to get more children. And I was listening to your podcast. It was the first episode I listened to. And it was about the history of birth and about all the horrible stuff they do in the hospital. And it was like, you could just give birth at home by yourself. And I was like, oh my God, this is the truth about birth. It just hit me. I was like, oh my God, this is the truth. And I was so excited. I listened to many episodes and then I told everything to my husband. I was like, yeah, I've learned this. I want to have a baby. I want a free birth. And he was like, okay, let's do it. And then 2 weeks later, I was pregnant. It happened so fast. So this was the pregnancy where I lost my baby. It was really intuitive. It was, I really took the wild pregnancy seriously. I was like, I don't even take any tests or anything. I have done that later, but in my later pregnancies. But that time I was like, I don't take any tests. I want this to be as wild as possible, as intuitive as possible. And when I got pregnant, I just slowly learned that I'm pregnant. And that baby, I felt that baby really strongly. I felt really connected to her. And it was such an amazing initiation to my new kind of motherhood, where I trust my instincts and just live my life. But there's also funny parts in that pregnancy where I called the prenatal care services and I was like, yeah, I want to book a time and I want a wild pregnancy. They were like, okay, we are booking you all the scans and all the tests. And so I just processed that and I never went there. So I just stayed out and kept going on with my pregnancy. And at the time, the first couple of months, I was thinking about having a doula. I knew that there was not going to be a midwife, but I was thinking about one doula. But at one point, I just knew that I want to do it by myself. I think I was in a process somehow still, because all went well. But then at around 28 weeks, maybe I started bleeding a little. I had some weird discard. I didn't know what that was. Discharge. And then at 30 weeks, I started contracting for a couple of days quite intensely, so that I really had to focus on them, and I was really confused. I was like, it's not gonna, she can't be born yet. It's like 2 months until my birthing season. So one evening I went to labor. I think I didn't realize it that time, but I started contracting really painfully. And in comparison to my first birth, I didn't have any painful contractions before I started pushing. So it was really different and quite painful, and I was really confused. And then I made the choice to... Now, looking back, I would have just stayed at home. But that point, I was like, okay, I live next to the hospital. I just walk there and go get checked. And I went there. They didn't have any record of me being pregnant or anything. They were really, really confused. And they wanted to have an ultrasound. And then I was like, yeah, let's do it. I just want to know what's going on. I know that something is wrong. And when they took the ultrasound, they were really worried. The doctors came to me and they were like, your baby is not okay. She has a really big head and really tiny body. So there's something wrong with her. And they were really, really, they didn't understand how it's possible that I hadn't have any ultrasounds before, but that was the first one. And I didn't believe them. I was like, no, my baby's fine. And I was in a shock probably. And I was saying that I'm going to go back home. And I'm not going to stay here. I don't want any medication. I don't want anything. I'm just going to go back home. But I stayed in the hospital, and they started to talk about we have to give steroids and stuff for the lungs and everything if she will be born now, way too early. And I was like, no, I'm not gonna. I don't want to. I want to go home. But then I ended up into the, they were just, it was like a room full of panic. They were ripping clothes off me. They were putting hospital gown on me and putting all the drugs and IV and everything. And then they started talking about C-section, that there's no other way you couldn't possibly give to a birth to a baby, that it's head up and has a huge head, and you could never give birth to that baby. And I was like, no, I was going to give birth at home. And it was like, they were like, no way. And then it's the last 15 minutes where I was just hoping for the contractions to stop and so that I could go back. But they went on and on and on. And as I know now that I have really fast births, it was progressing really fast and the baby was going to be born really soon. So, yeah. I didn't even remember to call my husband. It was all so like quick and shocking. And then they told me that, okay, you are 10 centimeters now. You're going to die if you let that baby come out. You're going to die. And there was a female doctor, the surgeon, I think. She was like shouting at me. She was in panic. I was like, let me give birth, but she was in panic. Then I called my husband that I'm here at the hospital and the baby's gonna be born now.
So she was still alive at this point in the story?
She was alive. She was born alive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did he make it to the surgery?
No.
That's intense.
No. Yeah. It happened really fast. They were shouting at me. I still tried to stay in the birthing room so that I could give birth to my baby, and I was laying on my back, and then they just waited for me to say yes so that they could drag me to the, or take their carriage to the next door to the
OR.
Yeah, next door.
And this whole, the whole premise here is the reason there was so much speed to this was because you were progressing so quickly, your baby was coming and they wanted to interrupt the baby coming out of your vagina because they made up a story that you would die if you birthed this baby.
Yeah.
That's the premise of all of this, right?
Yeah, that's it. And also that they didn't know the condition of the baby, so they thought that she might die as well. They were still trying to save baby 30 weeks. And that she has, her head is so huge that maybe neither of you would survive that birth. So then I was like, okay, just take me. And it wasn't an emergency C-section, but it was so urgent that they did this vertical cut. It happened really fast. I was like half past six, I was in the hospital, and half past seven, they cut her out. So I was there only for an hour.
Why do you say it wasn't an emergency, but they did the vertical cut? Like what do you mean? What is the distinction in your mind of how it wasn't an emergency?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought at first when it happened and after it, I thought it was an emergency C-section, but I wasn't put to sleep. So that's how they
told me. You had time to do the epidural.
Yeah, yeah. So they did the epidural. Yeah, exactly. And I had just some kind of sedative or something.
Did they ever tell you why they did the vertical cut?
No, I had no idea why they did that. I never ended up asking, or I just thought at first that it was an emergency. I thought it was when it's vertical, it's an emergency C-section, but then some people told me that you weren't put to sleep, so it wasn't, but still it was yeah.
Sorry, look, I mean, here's the thing. Emergency is subjective. What is emergency? That's just someone deciding that. And there's no universal rule about what an emergency C-section looks like. When let's say an emergency C-section is called, it is common. Obviously, the point of it is get baby out ASAP. So knocking mom out, she doesn't have time for the epi. Sometimes doing the vertical incision, but not always. There's no universal rule here. But also, this could just be this doctor's style. You know, like they knew that they were putting you on the C-section track long enough to do the epidural, but it seems like from what you've shared, they did think it was an emergency, mostly because they didn't want the baby to come out of your vagina, which she was about to do, it sounds like. But you know, there's no one way that classifies an emergency. So, but what's interesting about this is it really could have just been maybe this is like an old school doctor. Maybe she wanted to practice her vertical incision. Maybe, I mean, there's so much possibility here that really has very little to do with you. And also, I'm sure in their minds, they all thought it was some form of an emergency, not based on anything being wrong, it sounds like, but more so that you had the nerve to birth your baby fast.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting to think about, because I have thought about question that why they then normally do a horizontal cut, but now they didn't. It's I didn't know why.
But again, who knows what this doctor does?
Yeah.
Maybe she learned vertical and that's her preference and no one has told her not to do it. I mean, it could actually be such a wide range of, you know, they get to do whatever they want. And under the guise of emergency, they definitely get to do whatever they want.
Yeah.
As we know.
Yeah.
Okay, so then what happens?
Yeah, in that panicky situation. Yeah, so I was in the operation room and yeah, I was laying there and I was awake, and it's so horrible to describe, but it's like I didn't feel any cut, anything. It went like it was fine, but I felt when they put their hands inside me and they started to like, I felt that the baby was so tied in there that I was like, she's not, she was in no way coming out of that, like in that way. And they, I felt, it felt so horrible. They were just like pulling her out as really like as strong as they can. And then I started hearing this, like it sounded to me like this really psychopathic like comments, like, congratulations, congratulations, congratulations. And I was like, okay, where's my baby? And then they were like, congratulations. And then my baby was gone. And I didn't see her. I didn't hear her. I didn't anything. It was like this, congratulations, congratulations. It was horrible. And then the next thing I hear in about maybe 10 to 15 minutes that, yes, your baby was taken to the NICU, I think. And your husband is there. And she's alive. She's still alive. But we have done everything we can to help her survive. But we can't do anything. So it's over. But she's still alive. And do you want her? Do you want her? And I was like, yes, I want my baby. Bring her to me as fast as you can. So my husband came with the baby. I think this was all in these like rooms next to each other. So he came right away. And he was like shaking his head that, like at that point, I really knew that baby wasn't okay. Like until that point, I still had some, because I had so little trust to the system, I still thought that they just took a baby out of me, which wasn't ready to come out. Then I got her here, up in my, on my skin, and I saw her. I saw her tiny eyes were still open, and I heard her taking last few breaths, really like slow and really hard, and then she died.
Thank God she passed with you and on you. What a special, important moment she got to have with you.
Yeah, it was really special. I'm so grateful for that I got to hold her and I heard her take her last breath. And my husband got to see him right away after the birth, and he got to look her in the eye. Yeah, that was the moment my lion mother woke up in me. I was like, I'm never gonna give this baby away. I always do what they tell me to do, but this time I don't. I held her for the next 24 hours. I didn't give her to anybody because they wanted to. Even when they were taking me from the OR to, like in the OR, from one bed to another bed, they tried to take the baby from me. And I was like, I can hold my baby and you can move me. It's fine. And then I was moved to the room, and this was in the evening. So we slept the night with the baby, and in the morning they came to the room like, we want to take some pictures of the baby. And I was like, no, I'm not giving her, still not giving her. And yeah, we had time, we stayed 24 hours with our baby. Then in the evening she started to feel quite cold and all that, so then I was ready to give her away.
What's her name?
Hilma. Yeah, it's actually in a her birthday is in 3 days, so this is the time it happened 4 years ago.
And was there something physically clearly off about her?
Yeah, it was quite a relief then to learn that she was really that ill, that she couldn't have survived. Mm-hmm. She had some, we did let them do the testing to her, and she had just a random chromosome mix up, so that they were really, really surprised that she had lived in the womb for that long. Mm-hmm. Like usually that kind of, like she had so many, like nothing had been shaped properly in her body, so that they were really amazed that she had lived that long. And I, for me, that pregnancy was like, when I got over the worst, like the biggest shock, I was like, it was all about my wild pregnancy. I didn't know anything. I enjoyed my pregnancy. I was so connected to the baby. It was really a blissful time. And I was so grateful that I didn't know anything. I know that I wouldn't have done anything to end her life, because I wouldn't have, but it was still really, I was really grateful that I didn't know anything, because it was like, then she could stay for how long she wanted.
Mm-hmm. And she could have a complete life cycle. You know, this is such an important part, because in modern times with obstetrics, you know, most pregnancies are being tested for genetic defects, disorders, and, you know, when discovered, termination is suggested, is the expectation. And even for the women who discover this through obstetrical technology and then choose to continue the pregnancy, their pregnancy will be full of so much stress and pain and anger and grief and fracture, you know, because they're still going in for the scans. They're a part of the whole thing. You know, I'm sure there's, of course, there's a wide spectrum of what women do. But in my experience, if you're having a pregnancy in the system and you discover anything off about the baby, you have now set up a really, really stressful, overwhelming, scary pregnancy. And from what I've seen, women report feeling deep disconnection from their baby, even disgust of having a baby inside them that they know won't, you know, live long, or that might be, you know, different. Anyway, it's really dark, actually. It's a really dark path. And painful. And of course, losing a baby, you're not going to get out of the darkness and the grief. Like, it's coming for you eventually. But you speaking to this, like, that you will always have 30 weeks of a perfect life with her. You know, you will always have that, in how reverent of a memory that keeps for her in your family. It's so precious and so honorable, you know, and it's all in hindsight, obviously, but there is this ignorance is bliss thing with a wild pregnancy that is so precious. And I see it play out, you know, in various forms all the time. That's like, even something not as, you know, not tragic, but something still crazy, like twins. Women having surprise twins, they're like, thank God I didn't know, because I would have maybe shifted off my plan, or I would have been stressed out. And just getting to receive this second baby and come into that reality. You know, there's so many examples of the ignorance is bliss thing. But anyway, yeah, I just really admire your, what's the right way to say this? Like, it was so It was so perfect for you to do it that way for this baby. And sometimes we only learn things in hindsight, right? But you really gave her a gift to just let her be perfect for her life.
Yeah, yeah. It was such a beautiful pregnancy, and I really feel that way, that because I didn't know, I really could enjoy my time with her. And I remember when I shared this story in the RBK school, and you told me, it was the first time I heard about that, you told me that, yeah, she had a complete life, she had a full circle, and it's such a beautiful thought. I've carried it ever since. And also I feel like with the wild pregnancy and with like learning to be in the mystery the whole pregnancy until the end, also made the loss for me so much easier. I was like I already somehow accepted that anything can happen, and I didn't have any, like, with having a wild pregnancy, you just think everything's going to go perfect. It wasn't like that. I was prepared for anything.
Yeah.
If only I would have stayed at home and it would have happened completely at home. But yeah, then I wouldn't have this experience. And
yeah. But I understand, you know, so I do know some women who stay home at 30 weeks and they understand their baby, you know, may die from that choice. And I think most of them would transfer if they felt like the baby was trying to survive. But I also understand at 30 weeks going to the hospital, hoping that there may be something they can offer you, because some babies will have a better chance with the technology there. The irony is that some babies will die because of the technology. So there is no one way, right? There's only what we choose. Yeah. What a big experience. And your first child was only a year and a half.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, it was, wow. She was two at that time. Yeah.
Two. So how does that shape you? Big question. But how does that shape you and then take us into your next child?
Yeah. At first I was like, was I completely crazy for having a wild pregnancy? But quickly it shifted so that I was really grateful for that. And yeah, we came home and my daughter came home and she was like, where's the baby? And my breast started leaking. They offered me this like medication for not getting your milk up coming in the hospital, but I didn't take it. And then because I didn't breastfeed my first one, it was really healing for me already, because I didn't even have a baby and my milk was coming in. And yeah, there was, I really feel that Hilma made her short visit in this life with us was, one of the biggest things that had ever happened to me. And it was like a great pause for me in my life. And I actually had two jobs at that time, which I then both quit and stayed at home with my two-year-old, which I wanted to do. And there was one serious conversation with my husband, that if do we want to know if it's like, if she inherited that from one of us or it was completely random. And then we decided that we don't want to know, that we knew what she had, but we don't need to know if it's gonna possibly happen again or not. And I really wanted to get pregnant really fast, but we wanted to wait for a couple of months because of the C-section. And yeah, so before my third pregnancy, I took RBK school, and as I told, I quit my jobs and I started my own little business around birth. And yeah, RBK school was spring 21, and then the next fall I got pregnant. And I knew that I want to have a wild pregnancy again. There was no question. I knew that I'm going to free birth. There was no question. I felt like what happened with Hilma had prepared me so well that I didn't have a there was no question what I'm going to do, but it was still really hard. It was so hard in the beginning. Like, I was so afraid of it happening again. And still, I knew that if I would ever go back to the hospital, like, yes, I'm now pregnant. They told me in the hospital when we left that next time you get pregnant, you come immediately and we do some gene testing and you want to know if this will happen again. And I was like, okay, I'm never going to do that. There's this placental biopsy thing where they put the needle to, and there's a great risk of miscarriage there. And I was like, I would never do that.
So you had a wild pregnancy with your third child?
Yeah.
Wow.
Completely wild. Except this time I took a pregnancy test in the beginning. Doesn't change things, but no, I didn't go anywhere. No. No
one knew. You were just willing to deal with your fear and your worry and all the normal things that would come up after having not just a loss, but a loss with chromosomal abnormalities. You know, that's a whole nother layer to this, of course. That's a big deal. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, it was. And I was really scared from time to time. But I knew that I was scared, I was worried sometimes if it's going to happen again. I just let that worry be. And I was like, if I have to do it again, I will do it again. There's nothing I can do to prevent it. So I may just as well enjoy this pregnancy too.
Well, that's really an important point too, I think, for women to think on, because, you know, all this genetic testing and all of that, I guess, if you find something out and you want to terminate the pregnancy, okay, you know, whatever, do whatever is right for you in your life. But if you aren't going to do that, what's the point of knowing? Then you're just adding serious stress and you know, gosh, a whole bank of things, which I think is such an important point. I mean, it makes sense to me logically if you're going to do something different with the information. Okay, whatever. But I just really appreciate that perspective, because knowing that you would allow any baby that comes to you and through you to complete their life cycle, then why stress yourself out? Why overcomplicate it?
Yeah. It was really just going back to all the time to the trust and to doing what I want to do. I just want to live my life. And yeah, so it was quite tempting at some point, like around 20 weeks maybe, to, if I just get one ultrasound, then I would know everything is okay. Then it would be a relief and I don't have to stress that anymore. But I just couldn't go. I didn't want to go. So it was, I just had to deal with my fears. And I really...
You make a really good point around, because of the wild pregnancy, you had to contend with the possibility of death. And therefore, when you actually were surprisingly faced with it, you were better equipped. And this is a very good point, because when women go into the system and some random stranger tells them your baby's healthy and great, then when their baby dies 2 months later or during birth, it's incredibly, it's always disorienting, of course. You know, I don't think it ever is not disorienting to some degree, but if you have been outside sourcing a lie, really, because someone can't actually tell you your baby is okay, they can tell you that our tests didn't show blank, or this ultrasound shows a heartbeat, or this ultrasound, I think that, you know, if they were speaking honestly, I think I see four limbs. You know, side note, I've had clients in the system that, you know, were reported that all limbs were there and then were born without an arm. Like, you know, it's like, come on, you know, it's, none of it is real. It's smoke and mirrors. They can't actually tell you shit. And the entire premise is based on that they can. And so women walk around with this totally false sense of security. And we're not doing women any favors with that, because then when they do interact with loss, when they do interact with an early birth, they're totally not prepared. They've never even considered it, right? Whereas with a woman in a wild pregnancy, she's thinking about it all the time. She's contending with it all the time because no one can tell her. And she's not going anywhere for anyone to tell her anything about her baby. There is only what she thinks, what she feels, what she senses, what she worries about, what she, you know, whatever's going on for her is all of her information, which is really heady, very confronting. But I think for most women, you know, I want to say all, but I can't speak in absolutes, but I think most women who choose to birth outside the system and to not engage in, you know, the circus of obstetrics do at some point sit with, I don't actually know. I don't actually know what will happen. I don't know if my baby will survive. I don't know if my baby's okay. All right. Take it one day at a time. See what happens. And there's an inherent surrender in that that does resource you deeper if your story winds up with a loss. That is so powerful. Yeah, it's such a big deal. And, you know, I worked in the system for so long. And, you know, of course, I saw just as much loss in the system as I do outside the system. But those women, man, they had never even considered. They had never even thought about it because they had outsourced all of their, you know, all of their sense of security. They didn't have to generate it from within. It's a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. I love it in wild pregnancy that you just don't know, or you just have to accept it. No one can promise you anything. Of course, no one can never promise right. you anything. So it's
So tell me about your free birth.
Yeah, so the fears in the pregnancy, I got through them. Well, it wasn't that bad anymore after the 30 weeks or 31 weeks when Hilma was born. So the last couple of months was just being so excited, waiting for the birth to happen. And I actually had, I thought she was going to be born in, at 37, 38 weeks, because I had so much sensations all the time. She was actually born in exactly 40 weeks, which is so funny, but she did. And yeah, I didn't know everything was okay until I got her in my arms and she was perfect and healthy. And yeah, I was going to give birth at home just with my husband there. And I was quite sure that it would happen at night. I just thought it's going to happen at night. And I was awake at night, always at 2:30. And then she was born at 2:30, which is... Yeah, some say that sometimes it happens that, yeah, but anyway, my daughter was sleeping. There were a couple of evenings where I had some stronger sensations and I thought maybe this night she will be born, but then I woke up in the morning and she was not there yet. And then there was one day where we met up with some friends in the city in the playground with small children, and my friend was laughing at me. I was not there anymore. I was in completely different place. Really strongly in the birthing bubble already, but nothing happened in the evening. We just went to bed and slept for I slept for 2 hours and then I woke up in the night at 1 o'clock. And I felt some sensations, and my husband was sleeping and my daughter was sleeping, and I stood up from the bed, and then I felt strong sensations, and they weren't painful in any way, but they were strong, and then I just knew that it's happening. And I was leaning on the kitchen counter and I was laughing, I was giggling, I was like, ah, it's happening. I was so happy, so excited. And I really enjoyed just being alone. I was like, I had one hospital birth and one C-section like experience, and I was just so happy that I don't have to think about anything. I can just be here and let it happen. I loved it. It was so nice to just be there and feel the sensations. And because I had a quite fast birth before, I expected it to be quite fast, but it then progressed like so fast. After 1 hour of these nice sensations, I went back to bed, and then I took my husband's hand and like grabbed it really tight, like, okay, now I would maybe want him to wake up and be with me. So he woke up, opened his eyes and heard me. I was making some noise at that point, so that, yeah, he knew that, okay, she's in labor right now. And then the water splashed into the bed, like everything at once. So I ran to the toilet. I was there for the rest of the time, which was really short, about 20-25 minutes. So I sat on the toilet and I felt that I want to push. So I pushed. It was so enjoyable because it's the one thing I remember. So like such a nice part in my birth, because in the hospital, I was always told don't push or when to push and all that. So I pushed, and then I was just, I want to feel myself. So I felt her head, and I was like, oh my God, she's coming. And my husband was just cleaning the bed, which was full of like this, the water. And then he came to the bathroom door, and I felt like her head is emerging. So I stepped down to the shower, and I told my husband to, I need some warm water. I didn't have any pool or anything. I didn't want to, or there was no space, but I just wanted to go to the shower and want to have some warm water to help the burn. So he helped me. And then I was like, oh, okay, the baby's coming. You have to take some pictures. He put the lights on and started taking pictures, and baby's head came out, and head was out. It was quite intense. And then I felt her rotate, or it felt really tight. But then the body just came out, and I was so relieved. I was so relieved. And so, I don't know, after all I had experienced, and after all the like 40 weeks of wild pregnancy, she was finally there, and it was amazing. Yeah, I saw her. She's alive. Okay, she looks healthy, looks normal. She has her cord around her, like around her neck, and also around her like body a little bit, really tight. So I had to work to get that like off her. And she was quite, she was silent. Her head was, like the rest of her body was already quite pink, but her head was blue, and she had like a white mask like on her face. And for a while I was like, what do I need to call some emergency like now? Then I was just breathing, and I was just looking at her, and just like, it just crossed my mind. But then I get back to the baby and see what's going on in there. And then she started crying and turned completely pink, and it was a moment of relief. She was completely here. Yeah. So it was about 10, 15 minutes when I then she was okay. And then I checked. Oh, she's a girl. My husband had seen it, but he knew. I guess I had told him, or he just knew that he's not going to say anything. So I discovered that she's a girl. And then we woke up. Big sister, she was almost 4 at that point. Here's your little sister. And I gave birth to the placenta. I just wanted it out right away. So I just squat it, and I had a bowl, and the placenta was out, and I was still sitting in the bathroom floor when she started breastfeeding for the first time. It was really tight, and really, like, she started right away, and I was really, really happy about that. Yeah, so it was 2:30 in the night. We went to the bed. The placenta was in the bowl, in a sieve, and then on a bowl. And we all went to the bed. My husband fell asleep, and we started. We all slept until the morning. Then we woke up as a family of 4. It was incredible.
So how has this birth changed you or shaped you as a woman?
I wasn't sure if I am capable of it. Like, I wasn't sure. There was no guarantee for me. But after I had done it, I was like, yeah, I didn't know, but now I know that I can do it. And I did it. It was like, for our whole family, it was so healing. It was like I had waited for it for so long, and then I had finally done it. It was in the middle of the summer. It was really warm. I was just walking around and showing my baby's here, and I was so happy and so proud and so excited. It's like she's 2 and a little over 2 now, and it's all been so always so easy and natural with her, and all like breastfeeding and everything was so easy, and never took her anywhere. It's like completely different way than with my first one.
Well, thank you. Why don't you tell anyone interested, especially women in your country, how they can find you, work with you, listen to your podcast, anything you want to share?
Yeah, we have a beautiful women's community here in Finland for other women who are interested in home birthing and free birthing, and my podcast, Vapaa Synnytys Suomi, in Finnish. You can find it through my website and Spotify, vapaasynnytyssuomi.fi, and Instagram, vapaasynnytyssuomi. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Proud
Such
of you.
A joy. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. You can support this podcast by donating to it through the link in the show notes below. And of course, leaving an awesome review on whatever platform you listen on. The more reviews, the more visibility the show gets. So let's spread the good word of Sovereign Birth. Don't forget, you can watch our podcast interviews on YouTube and see the women as they tell their birth and power stories. And you'll also find our viral free birth collection of epic raw birth videos on our YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to our channel. We've always got a lot going on at Free Birth Society, and you can find out all about it at freebirthsociety.com, at Free Birth Society on Instagram, and opt in to my newsletter below. We offer courses on free birth, authentic midwifery, the blood mysteries, as well as one-on-one coaching, in-person retreats, and of course, our annual women's gathering, the Matriarch Rising Festival. Our exclusive, private, vetted membership, The Lighthouse, is definitely something to check out if you're looking for a community of wise sisters to get guidance from and to meet in real life. Together we rise, sisters. We must speak our stories, fully claim our lives, and support one another. This is the living revolution, and I am so grateful to be in it with all of you. I'll leave you with our gorgeous Free Birth Society theme song, Wild Woman by Aruba Red.
I honor you for the wisdom you held, the ancient traditions of plant medicine and womb magic. I feel the spirit of the ancestors as I place my hands upon my belly. This sacred portal will be honored. Eons upon light beams of survival, withstanding the eradication of our power by design. I will not allow the separation of our young to be forced upon me. My sisters will no longer birth in captivity. The picket line redefined from burning our wild women to paralyzing us and drugging our babes. Strapped down in a clinical white bed, drying up the milk from our breasts, keep your needles. My family will never again be doomed to chase those dragons or your poison. We reject your fear. We choose love. Everything with intention. Death, ascension. I will fly and bring her back.